Welcome back to the courtroom of current events here on Peter's Proffer. Really excited about today's podcast topic because I love all things sports, and it's very exciting when sports and law cross over for me as they did today and recently with the sports gambling decision that came down from the Supreme Court of the United States. We're going to dive into that. We're going to go into the opinion and the procedural history as well as what it means. So thanks for listening in, and as always, hit us up on social media at Tragos Law. All right, so today's topic, as I mentioned, is going to be on sports gambling and the new Supreme Court decision that came down. I have Peter Sardis and George Tragos with me. They each have their own individual interests and knowledge on this subject. Pete did his master's thesis on Harrah's Casino. My dad has had a couple of cases involving gambling. I know we worked on one together dealing with a couple of bingo chain stores on whether or not it was actually a gambling lottery type system. And then he also represented a big time bookie up in the Northeast a few years back. So we're going to get into a bunch of different topics, but I first want to start with what PASPA is, which is what kind of brought to light this lawsuit that the Supreme Court recently opined on. So one of you guys want to go on that?
Well, it's a very simple law. It basically says, states, you can't have sports gambling. And the fact that it was so simple and only referred to states is the big problem. But that's all the law said.
All right, it was signed into law in, I think, 92 or 93, which would have been old man George Bush, signed it into law basically prohibiting the states from having any kind of gambling going on any sporting-type games.
But, you know, they exempted certain states.
Well, they grandfathered in a lot of things. They grandfathered in certain states that were already doing some kinds of gambling, and then obviously Nevada was cut out of that. They were allowed to continue to have gambling in their state for sports.
Interesting lobby. Think about it at the time. Say, look, exempt my state. So three or four states got exempted.
But you know, New Jersey, the reason New Jersey is fundamental in this particular case is that New Jersey had the option to opt in because of Atlantic City. And by some reason, God knows why, they elected not to opt in, and then there was a vote.
Right. What I read is things were good back in the 90s, and then when they weren't so good anymore, the New Jersey changed its mind and wanted to be able to do sports gambling, which is kind of what brought all this to light. So let's take a second to talk about the sports gambling industry as a whole. And they showed that in Nevada alone last year, there was about $7 billion that was made on sports betting, and illegally, they estimate that it's a $150 billion industry.
Here's another stat. The NCAA tournament, $10 billion is bet on that. 3% of that was in Nevada. The rest of the betting was illegal.
So because it's such a big illegal industry, there are a lot of people that want to jump in and make money off of this, including the states. And like we said earlier, New Jersey opted out in the beginning, realized that was a mistake, and now they're trying to jump back in. So I want to get into a little bit about the procedural history and how this case actually got to the Supreme Court. Because a lot of people don't know, you can't just bring a case in front of the Supreme Court. Only certain cases get selected to even be heard by the Supreme Court, and even a smaller percentage of those cases actually have an oral argument where the Supreme Court cares what the lawyers say, to say it frankly, about the briefs that they write on a case.
Generally speaking, cases get to the Supreme Court one of two ways, either from a state Supreme Court decision that has a federal impact or from a federal courts of appeal. This case came through a federal courts of appeal. When it gets to the Supreme Court, then the Supreme Court looks at it, decide, all right, is this a case that has general application? In other words, is this something so important that we have to make a decision that affects the whole country? And it first goes to the law clerks that review the cases for the justices. Then the justices meet, and if four of the justices believe oral argument is necessary, then they vote and have oral argument.
And the law clerks of the Supreme Court are not just law students, they're big-time lawyers.
No. They're like the best of the best law students. I mean, like, they're the first guys out of Harvard or Yale. They're top of their class.
Aren't they lawyers?
No, some of them are, yes. Well, they're graduates, so I guess they are lawyers, yes.
Yeah, that would make them lawyers.
Well, they may not have passed the bar exam yet.
Okay, all right, fine. So the best of the best are the law clerks. They're the ones that kind of sift through the cases and decide, and then only a small number actually get to oral argument.
Right, the Supreme Court, there's 9 justices. They meet in a secret chamber that they have actually in the Supreme Court building, and if 4 of them authorize it, then there's an oral argument.
Okay, and the way that this case specifically got to the Supreme Court is New Jersey repealed a law saying that sports gambling was illegal, meaning they basically wrote a law now trying to legalize sports gambling in the state of New Jersey. The NCAA and the major sporting leagues, the MLB, NFL, NCAA, NHL, all of those leagues got together and they filed a lawsuit against the state of New Jersey, enjoining them, trying to not allow them to gamble or do sports gambling in their state. One of the courts decided with the NCAA, got appealed. That a court decided with New Jersey. It got appealed again. It decided with the other side. It kept going back and forth until it got all the way up to the Supreme Court.
I think the first thing you got to do is understand how PAPSA works. And the way the law is set up is it provides the sports governing authorities the right to go to court and to enjoin, which means stop someone from gambling on sports. It is not a crime. There's nothing illegal about the way PAPSA is set up.
There's nothing illegal about what New Jersey was doing.
No, that's the key, though, is the way the law is set up is it lets the sports agencies sue the state to stop them from violating the law.
Right.
Which is how we wind up in federal court.
Exactly, and which is how we end up with the Supreme Court making a decision about this case. So what comes before the Supreme Court in the briefs that each side, the NCAA and all of the sporting leagues versus New Jersey, they each write a brief, which is, it's called a brief, but it's actually a humongous document with all sorts of data and attachments. It's sent over to the Supreme Court. They read it, and then they determine whether or not they want to hear oral arguments. So what the state of New Jersey is arguing is that PAPSA, which stands for the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, which says it's unlawful for a state or its subdivisions to sponsor, operate, advertise, promote, license, or authorize by law or compact a lottery sweepstakes or other betting, gambling, or wagering scheme based on competitive sporting events. Okay, so they're basically saying that it's illegal for the states to do anything with sports gambling. The state now is arguing that violates the Constitution and the anti-commandeering provision in the 10th Amendment to the Constitution.
Let's do a little history lesson. The Founding Fathers, when they wrote the Constitution and then the Bill of Rights, which are the first 10 amendments, recognized that they did not want the federal government to have total and absolute control over its citizens and the states. So what they did was they wrote in the law that says, whatever the federal government can do is specifically provided to it in its powers. Anything else is reserved for the states.
That was the whole purpose of the Constitution, was to only delineate what the federal government could do. And that's it. Everything else belongs to the states, as Peter said.
Okay, so in this case, New Jersey is basically saying that this is something that should be decided by the states, and the NCAA and all the other sporting leagues are saying that, no, this is something that should be left to the federal government because the federal government is not actually prohibiting something. That's what they were arguing. So the Supreme Court then decided to hear oral arguments in this case. They looked at the questions, they read the briefs, and they thought that they had some questions for the lawyers that they wanted to kind of dive into these issues a little bit deeper.
Well, you know, you've got to realize this is one of those cases that the Supreme Court loves because it's going to have nationwide impact. It's a big policy decision, and it squarely goes into what the Constitution says the federal government can or can't do, which is why it was so interesting that Breyer, who is one of the most liberal justices on the Supreme Court, sided with the conservative justices. We've got 5-4 decisions all over the place in this Supreme Court. Constantly that kind of a split, because you have 4 conservative and 4 liberal justices, and you have 1 swing vote, which is Kennedy. But in the oral arguments, it was really obvious that it was going to be 6-3, because Breyer, Mr. Liberal, was going to side with the conservatives on this.
And what's interesting about the Supreme Court justices is most lawyers, politicians, people that follow that kind of thing are going to know which way these judges are going to vote on just about every case. They were appointed by certain presidents. They have a history of certain political leans throughout their time as a judge prior to becoming a Supreme Court justice. So it's never really a surprise when they vote on most of these cases. But sometimes, every once in a while, there's a case like this where one of them does swing to the other side. And it's always interesting to see that.
Oh, it makes it so interesting because the questions that Breyer asked were just killer questions. For instance, Breyer asked the NCAA lawyer, Tell me one case or one statute or one law that the federal government has that only applies to the states. They couldn't name one that existed in today's legal precedent within the Congress. Not one. This is the only one. And that was interesting. Another one was, answer this question. The United States Congress passed this law because blank. And the lawyer just took the bait. I don't know why he didn't see it coming. And he says, because we don't want the states to have sports gambling. And that fell right into Breyer's argument saying, see, all you're doing is regulating the states. There is no federal interest involved here. And therefore, this law is unconstitutional.
Right. Because if it would have been just focused on private actors or, you know, dealing with a federal issue on private actors, right, then it would have been constitutional because it would have been under those powers that Congress has.
Like interstate commerce.
Exactly.
For instance, it has something to do regulate interstate commerce. This had nothing to do with interstate commerce. They strictly were going after the states. And they were going after the states without any kind of regulation because this law didn't say anything like, hey, we're only going to regulate it. You have to be 21 years old. You got to do this. You got to do that. But that was one of the key issues in the opinion was, hey, you didn't do any regulation here, federal government. All you did was prohibit the states from doing an action, and you can't do that.
Right, and I think it's funny and how people talk about lawyers, and if you read through the court's opinion, one of the things they really fought about was the definition of the term authorize. One side argued that authorize only means permit. The other side argued that authorize requires affirmative action, and that the actual meaning of authorize is to empower, to give a right or authority to act, or to endow with authority. And that's important in this case because whether or not they are allowing the states to act or prohibiting the states to act is a very important distinction on whether it violates the anti-commandeering statute.
Right. The question is, if the question is the state can't do it because, then you have a problem. The spin on this is, can the state do it and they elect not to, then you don't have a problem.
Which is exactly what it is at the end of this opinion when they decide that it is unconstitutional and they strike down the anti-sports gambling law. Now each state will have its own determination of whether or not they want to allow sports gambling, which we will get to a little bit later.
It's interesting to note that all of the men on the Supreme Court voted to hold this law unconstitutional. All of the women voted to hold it constitutional. I don't know if that means anything, but you know, the men were in favor of the states having the right to have sports gambling if they wanted.
So what the final opinion of the Supreme Court was in this case is that the PASPA law is unconstitutional. They struck it down, and now each state individually will decide whether or not they want their state to allow sports gambling, and it's not going to be federally regulated to this point. And now let's get into the pros and cons of allowing these states to have sports gambling if they choose to do so. And the biggest pro, we'll start with the pros. The biggest pro that I have read and agree with is it brings this, you know, sketchy sports gambling shadiness out of the shadows and into the light, which will eliminate a lot of the issues with illegal sports gambling, which is problematic in all the illegal industries, whether it be drugs or whether it be prohibition back in the day where you don't have any FDA regulations on alcohol or on the drugs that people are taking. It's the same thing on this. You're dealing with offshore accounts. You're dealing with bookies. You're dealing with people that are going to break your legs if you don't pay them. And a lot of times if you do this online internet betting and you win a bet and then it turns out they're not going to actually pay you the money and you turn around and you try to, you know, sue them or call the cops on them, well, there's no repercussion if somebody doesn't pay you for something that you won on an illegal bet. It's kind of like we've heard the stories of people that go to a drug deal, they pay the drug dealer $50 and they don't get their drugs, then they call the cops and report it. Well, it was an illegal drug deal that you were trying to buy drugs on, so there's nothing you can do that he took your money and didn't give you any drugs back. So I think that's the biggest pro, is some regulation is going to bring this into the light, make it safer, and make it easier for just kind of everyday gamblers that want to just bet on the Super Bowl or bet on something like that for fun. It's going to make it easier and safer for them.
Let's not forget the possible economic and tax benefits of this ruling. The states will get money. Industry will get money. Who knows who's going to make money, but a lot of places will, because they're going to have this opportunity now to have an economic, a positive economic impact.
All right, so the government's going to, or the state's going to tax it. So A, it's going to make money. B, people are going to be safer. The chance of getting your legs broken just went down. So what's the bad side? What's the con?
Well, I think that the con of regulating gambling is it's going to be more prevalent. It's going to be more out there. And I think we're going to see more games potentially fixed. There's going to be more pressure on student athletes and on the guy that makes $10,000 a game doing long snaps in a football game, as opposed to the quarterback that makes $25 million a year. He's probably not going to fix a game. But the long snapper that makes $10,000 a game, he gets offered $1 million to make one snap go a little too far to the left so the kicker misses the field goal. Well, that guy could probably be talked into throwing a game. So they're worried about things like that. Or golfers throwing one golf round so that the standings change enough. Or I think that's going to be the problem, is the more gambling you have, the more money that's invested in it, the more pressure that are going to be on some of the lower level athletes to throw a game to make more money than they currently are making.
Well, how about betting on one person doing one thing? You know, whether he's going to hit a foul ball or whether he's going to strike out. That one person, if you can bet on one person, then that person can affect somebody's winning or losing. And
additionally,
that's a real pressure.
Additionally, it's the same con that comes with legalizing marijuana, alcohol, smoking, whatever, is they say, or there are studies that it's addictive and it's particularly attractive to young people. So the government is also, and the NCAA also put out studies saying that this is something people can ruin their lives doing, gambling. And if it's illegal, they think less people are going to do it than if it's legalized and the states are allowed to do it. Now more people are more willing to bet their mortgage or their, you know, their check that they just got that they need to pay their mortgage or for food for their kids. They're more likely to now bet this on the basketball game tonight to try to double their money.
Because it's legal.
Right, because it's legal. Because you're not going to go to jail for it, but at this point, you know, you are more likely to do it if it's legal. So I think those are the cons.
And are the states condoning it? You know, right. Now it's going to look like government is condoning gambling.
Right. So, I mean, I think that would be the con. Okay, so realistically speaking now, what is this going to look like going forward? And we'll start with the state level.
Well, you've got four categories of states right now. You've got the states that already have the laws in place that are going to be able to immediately jump into it, like New Jersey. You're going to have the states that have bills.
In California. California is the biggest one. They're ready to go, like, now.
Yeah. And then you got the states where bills are filed, but they're just not out yet of their legislature because they're waiting for this decision. Then you've got the states whose legislatures are out of session, and they just can't wait to get back into session to pass some kind of bill. And then you've got the states that don't want this at all.
Okay, so that's a long way of saying that there is a group, the three groups that are ready to pass bills in the very near future. What my research showed is there's about 20 states that are on that track that are already ready to go. Those states are Oregon, California, Nevada, which already has it, Michigan, Ohio, Missouri, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia, Indiana, Illinois, New York, Rhode Island, Kansas, New Jersey. A lot of states are ready to go with this, and the early prognosis is 90 days. That's how long they think it's going to take, or that's how soon they think we can actually have gambling in the state level with some of those 20 states, the ones that already have the bills ready to go.
Well, since we live in Florida, I think, though, we should concentrate on the fact that Florida legislature is out of session. It's too late to pass a bill in Florida, so it may be a year before Florida actually sees something like this.
And I think, I mean, if we were going to guess, we would think Florida's going to do it.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing that always scares me about this and about these states is they will do things like, for instance, Florida's, we've got the lottery.
Yeah, not every state has the lottery.
Right, we have the lottery in
Florida.
Which
is progressive and some people think is gambling, some people are scared of in other states, but we do it, which is what makes me think indications that we're going to do it.
In Florida, the lottery was a fraud. When it was passed to us, when they sold the lottery to us, they said the lottery was to add money for education in Florida.
Right.
And what it really did is, yeah, all the lottery money goes to education, but then what they did is they took the education money that they had in there out and put it in the general budget. So education in Florida is still not benefiting from the lottery like we thought it should. So I'm worried they're going to sell sports betting in Florida the same way by misleading the people, and then
the point is it's going to add to tax dollars, though. I mean, why not collect tax dollars on something that's already being spent now by people illegally?
Why not?
Because you know why? When you sanction it by government, when you tell people, hey, this is okay to do, then they are more likely to get addicted, more likely to do it. A lot of people still like to obey the laws.
No, but what I'm saying is if people are going to spend money on it, why not let it be taxed if they're going to spend money on it illegally?
That's the same argument as for cocaine or heroin. I mean, sure, if people are going to spend money on cocaine and heroin.
I think it's a little bit different on how cocaine and heroin have a physical effect on you than gambling.
I don't think the lottery has done a lot of good for the general population of Florida. I think the people who bet on it, a lot of them, like you say, can't even afford to buy food for their families, but they're putting their money into the lottery because they're being told, hey, one day you're going to be a zillionaire because you're going to win the lottery. So they're doing that instead of going out there and just working hard.
So in Florida, we have the Hard Rock casinos, we have racetracks, we have the lottery. I think, personally, that points to we're going to have sports gambling.
Well, dog tracks are going away, is my guess, because dog tracks, the Constitution.
I'm just saying these are indications to me that we are going to have sports gambling.
And the other gambling you're talking about, we're all Indian gambling.
Right, reservations.
I agree with you. I understand
that. You know what we do have in Florida that we haven't talked about is we got Disney. And you know Disney's going to find a way to get their
Well, Disney owns ESPN.
Well, there you go.
And yeah, I mean, it's all connected.
You know, and all the casinos, just for example, when the casino bills, remember they keep putting those casino bills out in the legislature. All these large hotels in Miami, they're ready to do casinos like that, but they've been stopped by our legislature because we realized that it didn't do any good for Atlantic City, and I don't know what kind of good sports betting is going to do for Florida.
I think it's coming, though, is all I'm saying. I don't know whether it's going to be good or bad. I'm just saying if we're projecting, I think Florida's going to be one of the states that allows it, which there's no guarantees. And when we look at what these bills actually look like, it's not a free-for-all, everybody come on, spend your money and gamble. The California bill includes some kind of regulation such as you have to be 21 years old and wagers must be made in person and with cash, not on the phone or the internet. And you're not allowed to bet on California college-based teams or college events such as the bowl games that happen in California. Now, this bill, I think, was written in 2014 or 15, so there's been some progression, and my guess is you're going to be allowed to do this stuff over the internet or over the phone, and you're going to be allowed to do it by credit card, unlike what some of these bills say. But there is going to be some kind of limitation on who can actually gamble on sports. It's not just going to be a free-for-all.
Well, I don't know. You might be right. But I just know that these things, once they start, they get broader and broader and broader and easier and easier and easier to place their bets. And technology is another thing. When technology improves, man, they jump on the technology and making it easier to place bets. The internet is just going to take over betting.
As we say in the law, it's a slippery slope. Yeah. Once you're there, how do you control it?
Well, Florida's deputy commissioner for Governor Rick Scott said that they will review the court's ruling and any changes to Florida's gaming laws will be made by the Florida legislature. So he didn't really take a side. He just basically said, we're going to read the opinion and then our legislature is going to make the decision.
My guess is he's going to sign it because he didn't say he would veto the legislation.
Well, we'll see. It depends on what the legislation is.
His desk.
Yeah, we'll see what the legislation is. All right, so let's move now to the three big sports leagues, NFL, NBA, MLB, and talk about what this could mean for them and what their interests are in it. And Mark Cuban in an interview said that he expects the franchises in the NFL, NBA, and MLB to double once sports gambling gets going at the state level.
What do you mean by double? You mean they're going to add teams?
Like right now, no. The value of each individual franchise. So like right now, I think the Carolina Panthers NFL team is looking to sell between $2.2 and $2.5 billion. Mark Cuban thinks that a couple years from now, it's going to be $5 billion, which I don't get why the Panthers owner would sell right now, but he is, and the deal's almost done, and that's about the value of that franchise is $2.2 billion.
Well, you're talking about the value, which means how is this going to increase the income and the profits of the franchise? And the way they're going to have to do that is they're going to have to tax or take a percentage of the betting so that if you want to bet on the Panthers are going to get
No, not just if you bet on the Panthers. If you bet on anybody in the NFL, each team. Well, here's how it's going to go. At least the NBA sent their, you know, in the article it said, quote unquote, Harvard lawyers to testify before a congressional committee about what the NBA wants if sports gambling becomes legal. They want 1% of everything. Everything bet on every sport. So whether it was bet on the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, the NBA wants 1% cut. Reportedly, the MLB wants the same thing. The players' union wants that to be included in basketball-related revenue, which means it's going to be split between the owners and the players, and they want fans to be able to bet on smartphones and even in the stands during games live betting. So that I was wondering why they wanted that in there, and I hadn't read the California bill, but they actually want people to be able to bet on their smartphones, which I think is really interesting, as that's what they're putting forward as the NBA will be on board if these things happen. And that's one of the things that they want to be able to happen is people to be able to bet on their smartphones because they want the in-game experience to be enhanced. And Mark Cuban even joked that maybe people will actually start liking the Major League Baseball again if they're able to bet from their smartphones in the stands. Maybe people will actually show up to the games.
Right. They're even thinking of changing the whole way you calculate a Major League Baseball game in betting, because right now it's a very complicated process. The bookies operate it, and the people who know what they're doing know how to do it. But it's hard for a layman to understand how Major League Baseball operates in the betting scheme. They're going to change that whole thing so that they can bet right now on their smartphones or whatever they're going to do.
And the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, said that they remain in favor of federal framework that would provide a uniform approach to sports gambling in states that choose to permit it, but they'll remain active in ongoing discussions with the state legislatures. They've always been in favor of it, the NBA, or I should say, they've recently been in favor of it, which is interesting because some of the other sports leagues are not.
Well, I was going to ask you, why does the NFL still publicly have a stance that they're not in favor of sports betting at all?
Well, they say stuff like, the NFL's longstanding and unwavering commitment to protecting the integrity of our game remains absolute. Congress has long recognized the potential harms posed by sports betting to the integrity of sports contests and the public confidence in these events. Given that history, we intend to call on Congress again, this time to enact a core regulatory framework for legalized sports betting, and we will always also work closely with our clubs to ensure that any state efforts to move forward in the meantime protect our fans and the integrity of the game. They basically stand and beat their chest saying, integrity of the game, integrity of the game. And what I think is interesting is, recently, the NBA went from David Stern to Adam Silver, and people see Roger Goodell as more of a David Stern type, which is very, 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 very old school, and all the old school guys don't want sports gambling, but Adam Silver, who's a lawyer, and is more new school, the more forward-thinking commissioners, they do want this. They see it as a way to make more money, which is really the point. The owners and the players are all going to be happier the more money they make.
Peter, you've got to go back, too, to the opinion. What you just read directly talks about is what's talked about in the opinion, that is the regulatory scheme. If the federal government had a regulatory scheme for sports gambling, it may have been upheld.
Because as opposed to just banning it altogether.
Right. So the fact that maybe they all get together and form some kind of regulatory scheme may save the next statutes that's passed by Congress.
And I don't get why they wouldn't do that. I don't get why they all wouldn't work together to take a piece of this money that's being spent on their sports anyways. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me why it's not already there.
There's also a bad thing about this. If they get 1%, let's say.
Well, they're not going to get 1%.
I know, but let's just for sake of argument, they get 1%. All right, you know the states are going to tax it. Well, let's talk about sales tax. That's 6, 7%. So there you got 8% right off the bat.
You got DraftKings taking a rake.
Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
But, so you got all that, but not just that, but it makes the illegal gambling more profitable.
Exactly. And so that's what you got to worry about.
That's right. So if you're trying to cut out illegal gambling, you've got to compete with them. If they're going to be more profitable, then you've got problems. You haven't solved any problem.
Okay, how does the taxing work on something like this?
Well, it'll probably be sale. Like right now, they're trying to tax, call it a use tax. When someone, for instance, you buy from Amazon and you may be in a state that doesn't have an Amazon facility, that state still wants to charge you sales tax. They call it a use tax. So now even going across state lines, they may still be able to tax your betting or your wagering within your state according to the sales tax of your state.
I mean, why not just do a vice tax, like on the cigarettes?
Well, they call it a use
tax. They could do that too. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, and that's, I think, what it'll be akin to, something like that.
They make their spread. They make theirs no matter what. For every bet you place, the state gets a piece of that action.
Of course, regulating it is going to be a nightmare. trying to keep exactly. track of all the bets and collecting
a lot sales. Of lawyers making a lot
the
of
funny,
money.
Yeah. The funny thing is it's funny that they want to do this in cash in California, because the truth is it'd be a lot easier to regulate.
Well,
this
I think that was because it was a 2014 bill.
You think that in just a couple of years, yeah. that the technology has made such
you'd
a
you'd be
difference?
Surprised. We didn't do credit cards in 2014.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean it's.
Yeah. How about bingo? Bingo used to be you sat there and you punched the
yeah,
thing.
Now
they've
now
got
it's a computer.
Now bingo's a computer, and you sit yeah. there with a laptop and punch in your numbers on the computer. Yeah. The technology is just going to go crazy on this. And the more money that's in it, the more technology you're going to have, because they'll invest in technology
right.
and develop the system.
So you've kind of taken us into our next point, which is the hurdles that still remain. Even though it seems like, okay, states win, let's do it, states, let's start sports gambling, there are still a lot of hurdles that remain. Regulation is one of them, obviously. Another one is... the proposal in Pennsylvania requires a one-time licensing fee of $10 million, along with a tax as much as 34% on gross receipts for somebody that wants to come in there and open up a sports gambling operation. So that goes into what you're saying. It's just cheaper to do it illegally. I mean, really, it's just cheaper and easier to do it illegally.
You know, one of the things when you went back and you were talking about the Major League Baseball and all that, what you really didn't talk about, and I understand why, is the NCAA. And the difference between the NCAA and all these
professionals. Well, because they can't take a cut of it because they are...
Right, and they want them to be amateurs. They want the players not to be influenced by money.
They're going to take a cut. The NCAA is going to take a cut
of it. Oh, sure they are.
You know they are. And that's just going to add to the players should get paid or student athletes should get paid, which is a podcast topic for another time. But that's really going to beef that up if they're getting, you know, 0.1% of what all the... sports gambling.
What are coaches going to get? I mean, think about that. Think about your
it
NCAA
affects everything.
Coach, and the, you know, if you're Saban at Alabama, you know, you're going to want a cut of the sports book.
Well, he's not going to get a cut, but the coaches union is going to find a way to split whatever the NCAA's cut is. Okay, so what do you think that this is? This going to be similar to marijuana as a state by state issue? Do you think?
Yes, it is going to be similar because the states are going to regulate it. Some states are going to be quick to jump on it. Some states are going to be slow to jump on it. Just
some
like,
states
just
won't
like
jump
marijuana.
On it at all.
Right, because it is. Marijuana, it has a...
It's
know,
just
it's
so
illegal. It's, well, it becomes it's, legal now. It's
yeah, this isn't going to have the stigma that marijuana has.
Well, I think it does have a stigma. It's not the same stigma, but I think it does have a stigma. And I think it's also going to be really interesting because it deals with something that you can do in one state, but then you drive to another state and then you can't do it. Or you can't do it in your home state, so you just drive over to the next state and then you can do it. So that's kind of an interesting...
Yeah, lotteries like that.
But that's kind of an interesting thing that goes along with stuff like this and marijuana. And I think that's kind of the murky water that a state-by-state legislation brings into effect.
Well, you know, if you start legalizing all vices, which is... You know, where we're heading.
Yeah.
You know, you got marijuana starting to be legalized. You got this sports betting being legalized. You know, pretty soon, really, there's not going to be anything you can't do as long as the government can make money off it.
Okay, so one other thing I was thinking, and I want to talk about this generally, Dad, especially from you can kind of draw on the case that you had up in the Northeast. But when we talk about regulation and something becoming legalized, if it's something like sports gambling, usually they will be harder on the people that are doing it illegally because there is a legal realm to do it in. So what are the criminal ramifications right now for sports gambling or doing this illegally? And what do you think could change about them now that it's becoming possibly legal on a state level?
You know, you say that, but think about marijuana as an example. Marijuana becomes legal. Well, then the illegal possession of marijuana... A lot of people are trying to go back and reverse their convictions.
Right, but I think that the reason that this is going to be bypassing the legal way will be for money reasons, to not get taxed by the government, and I think the government's going to care a lot more about that.
But you're probably going to see enforcement go up.
That's what I'm saying.
I think you're going to see snitching go up.
Well, I agree, but that's not like marijuana. Marijuana has become basically illegal. Basically legal, even if it's illegal in states. They're writing tickets for it or they're letting it go, saying no big deal. I don't think that's going to be the case when the government and all these other big-time influential companies and people are making money off sports gambling. I think they're going to crack down on the people that are doing it illegally.
They might crack down on it to get their tax money.
That's my point. So that's what I'm asking you. So right now, what does it look like if you get caught – in a sports gambling scheme? What are the types of crimes you can be charged with? What are the potential sentences and fines and things like that?
Well, there are laws saying you can't operate a gambling house. You can't operate a gambling business. There are various states that have penalties that go up to years, 20 years. But, you know, frankly, hardly anybody goes to prison just because they're gambling.
Well, your guy was a sports bookie, right?
He was a big-time bookie, and he did not go to prison.
Right, but he was a big-time bookie.
Could be because his lawyer was so good.
Well, yeah. So he was a big-time bookie. What was he charged with?
He was charged with operating a gambling establishment.
Okay, and what was the potential penalty he could have gotten?
I think he was somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years.
Okay, and that was a federal case.
Yeah, that was a federal case.
Okay, so that's what it looks like now. Do you think that will change, or do you think it'll just be a similar crime? It's going to have to change, right?
I don't
right?
think the crime will change.
No?
I think that enforcement may change.
But wouldn't the crime have to change because it's not going to be illegal to run a betting house
it's
now?
It's illegal if you don't have a license.
If you don't have a license.
So they'll have to change it, though. They'll have to change the language in the statute, I would think.
No, they'll keep it the same. It's just that it'll be a licensed gambling
establishment. So that's going to have to change the language in the statute, right?
I guess you're right.
Yeah, so as opposed to just running a gambling house to being illegal, if you're doing it under a license, you're going to be allowed to do it.
Yes.
So they're going to have to change it to make – and then they could change the penalties as well if they wanted to.
We know the interesting thing in Pennsylvania where this happened is that – excuse me, Ohio. Is in Ohio, you can actually get a license to have a sports book. But you can't book any more than, I think it's $5,000 a week or something. There was a cap on how much you could actually book. Since he was way over the cap, that's why he got charged. But you could get a license in Ohio.
So we'll finish up with talking about how this has already affected some companies, what people are looking to do, how people think, and when I say people, I mean individuals think they can make a dollar off of this when they look at the landscape and try to get out ahead of something. How are the other people going to make money on stuff like this?
Well, I tell you one thing. People have already recognized that DraftKings is going to make money. Their stock went up 11% when the decision came out. And everybody knows, number one, they've got a customer base of people that are going to do sports gambling.
Absolutely.
They've got the technology already in place.
The infrastructure's already
there.
They've
got PayPal. They've got everything. They're ready to roll.
Yeah, you can pay by credit card. You can pay by PayPal. You can transfer money in and out very easily, unlike these illegal sporting apps that are on your phone where you have to go through an offshore account and get a paper check mailed to you in the next 14 days. With DraftKings, it's immediate. You can do it through your credit card, bank account, PayPal. They've got it already all set up to be a boondoggle when this stuff actually goes live.
Caesars went up 6%. I mean, all the gambling houses are just going to go crazy because they're ready to roll on this.
And I was going
to
say, don't count out the corporations that own the casinos. These guys know what they're doing. They've got their hands in everything. And I think you're going to see a lot of different methods to gamble that you haven't thought of yet.
I wonder if a lot of the people that are trying to open the marijuana spots in a lot of these states are going to jump into this as well. I mean, they probably already have some of that infrastructure set up for a business that's like this going to be heavily regulated.
The regulation of the gambling business is going to be much less than marijuana, because that marijuana, aside from the fact that it's heavily taxed, you've got to realize you're selling a product.
You don't ingest gambling.
You're selling a product. You're not selling something over, not internet gambling is not a product. Selling something physical with marijuana.
But look at Pennsylvania's law. What is there, $10 million to get a license, to get a gaming license?
Right.
Well, that cuts out all the little marijuana houses because none of those guys have $10 million to get a gaming license to open their door.
And I don't think it's going to actually be like that in every state, but you never know. I think that people are going to try to invest in this and try to get in on sports gambling because I think it's going to be huge, and I think it's going to change the sporting industry, and it's going to be even more of a lucrative industry than it already is.